It's good to be with you all. When I agreed to speak, I didn't realize it would be the first day of Black History Month. I mean, I did if I thought February 2nd, right? But I wasn't thinking about that. And what your beloved musician just did is, a round is also a form of call and response. So in, which is throughout liturgies of various faiths and communities that come together to draw near to truth, but it's certainly in the spirit of the Black Church, which I emanate from. And so I feel very welcome, and the words of welcome themselves really touched my soul in a way that we are to be here together. So I do come to you as the granddaughter of a Black Baptist pastor. I'm the buckle of the Bible Belt. We fight over that title. Oklahoma is it, in case you need to know. There's a Baptist church on every other corner. More Baptist than people, because, you know, they never purge the rolls like good Unitarians do, right? No letters of membership, you know, moving. It's like, if you've joined, you're a member for life. So who knows how many churches I've got membership at. But I wanted to come to you with a text, because I understand you're doing an interfaith series. I also understand you're in transition. And often religious people are people in transition and people in exile, people on a journey, as we all are. And what I love about the Unitarian tradition is this embrace that we're all on this journey for truth, and that we're all spiritual people and connected to the universe. And so I wanted to use this classic text in part because it happens to be the text for the Christian liturgy, what's called the lectionary today, and it happens to be a perfect text that I think is unifying more than divisive in already polarizing times. And so I want to talk to you about paradoxical poverty. The paradox of poverty is that poverty is good news. And there's this fascination in this text with poverty. And why is that? And when we think about poverty, poverty is the ultimate vulnerability. After this selection in Matthew chapter 5, which I challenge you to go back and read through Matthew 5 and 6, the next part of the text is what is often called the Lord's Prayer. And in that prayer, Jesus teaches his disciples to pray for their daily bread. Poverty is literally not knowing where your next morsel will emanate from. Poverty requires people to create meaning out of suffering constantly, to press into their humanity. What we know from data about the poor is that they give to others out of their poverty. Those with the lowest incomes per capita give the highest percentage of that income to tithes, offerings, philanthropic activities. Even when they lack income, they give out of the abundance of what they have. It's very difficult in some places to get children out of the foster care system because poor families, they extend around other people. So aunts and uncles exist everywhere. I had a friend, she was white, she was trying to get kids out of the foster system who are primarily Black and brown. She could never get a kid. And she was offended, she was personally offended. She's like, we've got a nice home, we've got things to offer. And what she learned, what she found out, she couldn't get a kid because these aunts and uncles, these other mothers, would bring these children into their homes rather than them being deployed to different homes throughout the city. That's what poverty is. But I want to talk to you, also, the most exuberant hospitality I have ever received in my life have been in the poorest places in the world, where a woman in a village in India was literally giving me what could have been her last try. She lived in a hovel. And she, out of the abundance of hospitality, the freedom that comes from poverty, lavished me with the gift of chai. So I want to talk to you about poverty as this idea of emptying oneself. In other parts of the New Testament, the Apostle Paul talks about the notion of kenosis in the Greek, which is literally emptying oneself, to be radically poured out on behalf of other people. He says, in response to this notion of kenosis about Jesus, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility, the humility that poverty requires and thrusts upon us, whether we want it or not. With humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Jesus, who did not, while he was divine, regard equality with God, something to be grasped, but emptied himself to the point of death in the Christian tradition, even death on a cross. Now, there are many forms of poverty, my friends. It's not just financial poverty. In a place like Charlottesville, at a church like Thomas Jefferson, Unitarian Universalist Church, some of you may have known financial poverty in your lives, although many of you likely have never known it and never will. But we are called by the universe to be poor, to live our lives literally poured out for that which is lovely and good and true about the universe and about one another. And so I want to tell you, give you some examples of times in my life where I've seen people live in these ways in my various travels. So before coming here to Charlottesville, I lived in Chicago for 10 years. If you know anything about Chicago, it's a city of bustling and moving. It's a city of public transportation. It's very cold, too. You know that. It's very windy, the windy city. But what never stops is the elevated train, right? These forms of transportation that move us to and fro. And so one day I was taking the L, specifically the Green Line, and I met Jesus on the Green Line. I got on to the Green Line, and it was one of those Chicago days where the weather changed in an instant. A storm system blew through, and so people were on their way home from work, so that morning it might have been 65, which in April in Chicago feels like a heat wave. People wear shorts, they get out their sandals, right? And other places, like my friends in Southern California, they have on puffy jackets when it's 65, right? Literally, one of my best friends sends me pictures of her daughters in their ski jackets when it's 60. So it was one of those days, and everyone was feeling themselves because it was warm out and the sun was out. And all of a sudden, it's 45 and windy and rainy. So I get on the Green Line and I see this beautiful woman with long dreads and she's on her laptop. And I'm like, that's dumb, because you get your laptop snatched in Chicago on the Green Line. And I was like, she's not very smart. And so I'm sitting there and I'm on my way to my book club, E.G. Wine Club. And the woman is doing her thing on her computer during rush hour, and I live in Oak Park, known perhaps to you as the home of Frank Lloyd Wright, Ernest Hemingway, and others, and Larisha. And I'm going to book club on the whole other side of Chicago, because even though the L is cool, it's not connected very well, so it's going to be an hour train ride. So I'm people watching. I'm a social scientist, you know, and I see a kid who's going from Oak Park two stops down, which is one of the poorest parts of the city. It's also one of the highest, that also coincides with high crime rates. It coincides with one of the highest rates of HIV/AIDS in the city. And it also coincides with the highest rates of single motherhood in the city. And she sees this young kid and she says, "Where's your jacket?" He said, "I don't have one." And the woman literally takes off her outer jacket, takes the jacket off of her body that's closest to her skin, the one that's keeping her the most warm, and gives it to him. And she says, "You be careful out there." And I sat there, and I pontificated, and I'm getting teared up because this is who we are called to be in the universe. To literally, later in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, if someone asks for your coat, give them your cloak. Give them the thing closest to your skin. The thing that's giving you warmth and life. Be willing to pour that out on behalf of your needy brother or sister. It requires seeing people as our brother and sister, though, doesn't it? It requires seeing the kid who everyone paints as the gangster, as throwaway, as your brother and sister. She saw him, and she gave. My last story comes from Rwanda, where I first went in 2014, and I was sitting under a tree with survivors and perpetrators of the genocide. As Frank and Linda sit next to one another, imagine Frank killed every member except two of Linda's family. And they've decided to come together and forge a life of forgiveness and reconciliation against all odds. None of us would blame them if they chose to ignore each other every day. And there's a woman that I call Mary, like the mother of Jesus, because Rwanda is a beautiful country. It's not the S-hole country that the president spoke of it as. And it's a land of 1,000 hills, literally. 1,000 hills and 1,000,000 smiles, because Rwandans smile against all the poverty that exists and persists post one of the most heinous genocides of our history. It's a Holocaust by another name. Genocide is brother killing brother. And these weren't different tribes. Those were colonial impositions. Hutu, Tutsi, Twa, same people. So it's brother killing brother, husband killing wife. And this woman tells a story of coming down one of those hills, and you can see clearly across the other hill, and she sees the man who left her for dead. The genocide started on Easter Day in April of 1994. And the man who left her for dead said that Easter morning, he stabbed her multiple times and said, "Your God died today and you'll die too." She sees him coming. She has a decision to make. He starts to get nervous because after the genocide, the genocidaires, those who killed, moved back to their communities. Rwanda didn't become Sudan and South Sudan. And so she has a decision. How is she going to treat the man who left her for dead? And as they approach, she says, "Hello, do you recognize me?" He said, "I don't know you." She said, "Sure you do. You stabbed me here and here and here and said I would die and that my God died." And she said, "Next time you see me, look at me, speak to me, I am your mother." That is not unlike what Jesus told his disciple John when Jesus was on the cross. He looked down at John and said, "Son, behold your mother. Mother, behold your son. We are one family. This is one universe." Thomas Jefferson, United Unitarian Church, "If you will not do the same for the person sitting next to you in the pew, if you will not pour yourself out for this community, I promise you, you will not do it for humanity." And so the question today, at the beginning of Black History Month, is who will we be? Who are we becoming? And there's a freedom in poverty, in pouring ourselves out radically for one another and for the universe. There's a beauty in poverty. And the question is, are we willing to die to self and live to our neighbor? Blessed to you today, and let's have a moment of silence now.